They've never even gone to the moon. Look into it, at least.
Why has nobody been to the moon in such a long time?
That's not an 8-year-old's question. That's my question. I want to know, but I think I know. Because we didn't go there, and that's the way it happened. And if it didn't happen, it's nice to know why it didn't happen.
I remember very clearly, I think anybody who was alive at the time does, I remember my parents waking me up, and we went down and we watched you guys land on the moon.
No,
which
you didn't.
Was,
no, you didn't.
What?
Because there wasn't any television. There wasn't anybody taking a picture. You watched animation. See, you associated what you saw with...
I have very hazy memories.
Yeah, I know.
It's all it's a total controlled opposition psyop. They put.
Good evening, everybody. It is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. It's 7:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. This is the Fakeologist speaking, coming to you from the North Shore of Lake Ontario in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Yeah, I'm slurring my speech a bit. Good evening to all the listeners on fake11.com/stream1. It looks like there's three different people listening in. And one is from Ann Arbor, one is from Houston, and one is from somewhere else in the United States. It says they're all using AXIOS 0.26.0. I don't know what that means. What is AXIOS? AXIOS. Is that maybe the page? The streaming page? Yeah, fake11.com/stream1. That's where we're broadcasting from for the audio. That's our own server. You can also go to fake11 or fakeologist.com/live. And that will bring you to a number of options where we're on FakeoTube, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, DLive. And I think that's it. And let's just take a peek here. Make sure we're broadcasting live on FakeoTube. That's my site. It's open for rent, by the way. Open for sponsorship. It says here, FakeoTube by nobody. So nobody's sponsoring it right now. So if you want to donate $100 a month, you can have your name on it. I'm going to bring up the FakeoTube chat here as I can only do once the show starts. That's why I'm doing it now. And it's not integrated with the other chats. As you can see on this slide here, we do the show Sunday to Thursday around 8 p.m. Tonight I'm starting out early because I have a guest tonight, and I did say I would call said guest, and you will recognize this guest. I think I actually put it in the fakeologist.com/live. Dialing.
Hello.
Dialing Marilyn. Marilyn, hello.
Do we need to do a sound check?
You're sounding okay, Lynn. How you doing tonight?
Pretty good. I'm a little bit disoriented because I made the decision. I said, how am I going to prep for this?
No prep required.
Well, you know what I decided I'd do? Something I would never ordinarily do.
Oh, wow.
7 to 8. Like, I'm thinking I want to really warm myself up psychologically. So 7 o'clock here in the Mid-Atlantic is when NPR runs their nightly news with Judy Woodruff. And
oh, right.
Right.
I hear her all the time on the No Agenda show. They clip away.
Exactly. What I will do typically is I'll listen to the No Agenda show and I get my NPR through them because I can't stand NPR.
I guess not.
And most of the time I don't really care what they're, but if it's being reported by another source, like another one would be Jimmy Dore, for example, will critique NPR and MSNBC and some of the other CNN and so forth. But no, I don't want to listen to that crap. No one does.
No.
No one under the age of, look, who under the age of like 70, no, 60 maybe, listens to NPR for their news? Actually, who listens to TV or radio for their news now anyway? I'm under the age of, I don't know, 60, 50? I mean...
Yeah, it's got to be at least 65 now. It keeps moving up every year, for sure. They're not getting new audience.
Yeah, their audience is rapidly dying off, but mm-hmm. still, you've got to consider the reality that there is a cadre... A cadre of government bureaucrats.
And, yeah, that's true.
You know, college professors. I mean, you know, there is a cadre that does dutifully listen to NPR in order to get programmed.
You're so right about that. That's why they live in an alternative universe, because they're getting a completely different narrative than, say, the Christians. Than the alternative media crowd. We all live in different media worlds, don't we?
Different dimensions. Different bubbles. Now, I needed to take my car into the shop, so I got a ride from a friend of mine who lives. He's somebody I've known a long time, but he's like 70. He's 9 years older than me, so he's 80 this year.
Whoa. How's he doing?
And he's not in the greatest of shape either, but...
Injected?
Oh, I'm almost afraid. Probably.
You're afraid to ask, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'll tell you how it is.
It's so personal a question, though, isn't it? It's very personal.
Yeah,
it is.
But he knows my views on it. I've made my views clear, but we don't really pursue that much when we talk. But he's up the road from me a few miles, so it's really convenient. He can drop me off, and you know, to pick up my car when it's in the shop. Car's in the shop. On the way in his car. On the radio, what's he got? He's got NPR on. This is maybe in the afternoon. It's about 10 or 11 in the morning. So I think to myself, oh my God, he's listening. And I think he noticed, I noticed what he was listening to, and he said, well, I usually have NPR. I said, oh, yeah, it's okay. I said, you would have taken the brainwash. Go ahead. And I kind of laughed about it. And he doesn't take it all that seriously, but I had to stop and remind myself that there are people out there who think that is like, you know, like the New York Times or the Washington Post, or it's one of those venerable institutions, legacy. We shouldn't say mainstream media anymore. We should call it legacy media. Legacy media.
Yeah, I agree. That's good.
There's nothing mainstream would be like Joe Rogan. You know what I'm saying? That would be mainstream media for more and more and more people who consume media. At least if you looked at the numbers in terms of how many million subscribers, whatever. But there are people above a certain age threshold. And also, like I say, these government bureaucrats, some of whom apparently have the power, have police powers and everything else, like Alejandro Mayorca and his new disinformation czar.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's a woman, right? Alexander.
Yeah. I get her name is Mina Jankovic. Mina Jankovic, and she works for the Wilson Policy Center. And you see now, by now, the videos of her singing, doing her karaoke routine, have circulated so widely. I don't think there's anybody that hasn't seen and heard them yet. Have you? I mean, maybe you have you not seen these ridiculous?
I heard them on. Did No Agenda play it? I think they did on Sunday.
Yeah, they probably did. And they also went on and played the clip of her of another performance she gave where she essentially says, you know, who do I F-U-C-K in order
yeah,
to...
Yeah, I'm not going to seek that kind of crap
right.
out. Yeah,
like
won't.
I say, I wouldn't hear it if I didn't listen to that, to maybe the No Agenda podcast or you know, wherever else I'm going to come across it. I'm going to see it maybe in my Facebook news feed or something like that. Someone's going to say, look at this idiot.
Yeah.
Because that's what people have to laugh at now, although I suppose it's to be taken seriously. And that's what I'm saying. We have to distinguish between, it's fine for us to laugh at this stuff, but at the same time, we have to realize these people really do have the muscle of state bureaucracies and police powers behind them.
I know.
Whatever they come up with. And that's when if you watch these hearings on C-SPAN, where they're asking this DHS direct questions, and he's just He's just reading from a sheet of paper. From he doesn't care. He does. It's really weird now. So hey, I want you to guess. I tune in NPR because I wanted to see one of the ways I evaluate how the party line is being propagated is by how many minutes are devoted to a given story, a given narrative. What are the headlines? What are the priorities? That gives you a clear indication of where, what agendas are their high priorities for their cult followers who are listening to this or watching it. Because I guess NPR's Nightly News does come on on public television as well. So, I guess this is what blew. I guess it kind of blew me away, but maybe it shouldn't have. Because, you know, you'd think it'd be counterintuitive, but then again, maybe not. What do you suppose? First of all, one of the most notable things about this, it's they have to do this in like a little less than an hour. And one of the most notable things tonight, which is a Tuesday night, is how few stories they cover. What there was just a handful of stories they covered. But I want you to guess. I'm going to sound like Marcus Allen now.
Yeah, you're always testing me.
Well, you know, I understand where that comes from because it's people want to know, is this something you would naturally expect to be the case or is it like totally off the wall? The first 38 minutes of NPR's Nightly News were devoted to guess which news headline story. Take a guess. This is difficult, I know, but go ahead.
Well, you see, the problem is I don't know the headlines of the day because I'm not listening to current stuff ever. The only
there's only a handful. If you think about it, there's only a handful of narratives that are currently in the legacy media right now. Which one do you think? Now, think about this, because I thought they could have spent the first 5 minutes reporting on it, and that would have been it, or the first 10 minutes. But 38. I'm going to say that again. The first 38 minutes, that's more than half.
3 plus 8 is 11. Oh, just tell me, because I'm in Canada, so I don't always get the same as you get.
Right, exactly. This wouldn't mean a freaking thing in Canada. It won't mean a freaking thing in Canada. That's a good hint for you. If I tell you, this wouldn't mean a freaking thing in Canada.
Oh, the abortion thing. The abortion thing.
Ah, very good. You got it. You got it.
No, okay, because, you know, Jason Goodman, he sent an email because I'm a patron of his, dollar a month. And he's standing in New York City. There's some kind of gathering, 1,000, 2,000 people somewhere, maybe in front of the mayor's office. Right.
The alleged leak.
Allegedly.
Supreme Court paper circulating among the judges that, you know, suggests that maybe they're going to reverse the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision.
Right.
That asserted a constitutional right to abortion, so took it out of the hands of the states and all that.
Right. And yes. We tried to look in a Roe v. Wade, and I don't think it says anything of the sort. But that was the net effect. But I think it's such an offhanded way to disable or seemingly disable.
It's to keep the issue going. It's what we used to have a phrase, wedge issues in American politics.
Yeah, I know a wedge issue, yeah.
Right. And this is, if any issue is a wedge, and I don't just mean like race. Race can be very serious. Mm-hmm. But I mean something that's almost used like an irritant, like, well, abortion. I mean, come on. It is the ultimate wedge issue if you want to divide people along whatever their religious beliefs happen to be or whatever, you know, or because there's no nuance allowed in the, like, you know, in the abortion debate. If you listen to the pro-abortion side, they're going to make it sound like, oh, they won't allow you to take a morning after pill, or
right,
they won't allow you to use birth control. They're going to outlaw birth control. They're going to do that. You know, they're going to, the argument is so exaggerated coming from that side, and as for the pro-life side, you know, okay, there are, I guess, you know, in some sense, they are pointing to borderline infanticide where you're talking, because what the Supreme Court said in 73 was fetal viability. Just for your audience's edification here,
yeah,
there is nothing, not a goddamn thing in the United States Constitution that says anything relating to abortion or birth control.
But how about right to life? Right to life. Is that in there?
No, that's the Declaration of Independence.
That's the Declaration of Independence.
Life, okay. Liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
Or life, liberty. Oh,
okay.
Right, which is really kind of plagiarized from John Locke's Life, Liberty, and Property.
Right.
But no, the Constitution does it. It basically, the only time it ever makes any reference to anything that would even be relevant to the question is it refers to birth. As in, for example, anyone running for United States president must be a natural born citizen. That they have to have birthed here anywhere in the territorial United States. I'm not sure if it would qualify to be born in a territory or not, because I understood that was a bit of an issue for John McCain or somebody. But what I'm saying is the word born and birth are used, but that's it. That's it. There's nothing about no right to life in the Constitution. But the implication by that is this is exactly the sort of thing that the great founding fathers would have said, leave it to the states. The so-called laboratories of democracy. Let the individual states work it out. Because look, we don't have a federal law for murder, if you commit murder on a federal property, you can be prosecuted for federal felony murder.
Right.
But in every one of the 50 states has its own laws.
That's right.
Defining, homicide.
Everything is covered. Everything is covered, yeah. That's right.
Right, exactly. And so the natural answer, this really should have been, sorry guys, just like elections, right? Like just this question of the stolen election. And the courts never want to render any judge any jurisdiction, and they don't want to get involved in that at all. But the courts are corrupt. And the Supreme Court, I could go off on this for hours. This over reverence.
And don't forget, we want to talk about World War II as well. We got to get.
Oh yeah.
And I want to keep this show I want to keep the show to about an hour because I want to watch Mr. E's latest video, and it's about half an hour.
He's got another one out. I want to see it too.
Yeah.
CGI or is he into? Satanic.
He's going into Yuval Noah Harari's book. He has three books.
Oh.
This little weasel. This one's called Sapiens. Sapiens.
They want to make robots out of us. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to watch that.
My brain.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, 38 minutes NPR spent on this story. 38 minutes, and not once. Point of note. Footnote. Not once did they even reference the idea that, oh my God, what a breach of protocol for someone to. I think they said this is the first time in the history of the court that anybody's leaked.
There's no leak. There's got to be no leak. This is all made up, isn't it?
But what I'm saying is this discredit, this procedurally, that's an important point you just made because, of course, the Supreme Court itself issued a statement saying.
Do we watch Elizabeth Warren losing her mind? It must be over this.
Angry and upset. Angry and upset and determined. And for decades now, and we are going to fight back.
I've never seen you so angry.
I am angry. This is what the Republicans have been working toward this day for decades.
Well, I am here because I am angry too. We are not going back.
We are not going back.
Not ever.
Not ever.
Not ever.
Decades now.
Cut that off. Next caller.
John Talks, one of my favorite YouTube channels. 30 seconds at a time. John Talks, the clip master.
I gotta check that out.
Oh, he's great. Every day he puts out a couple clip fests. If you want your news in 30 seconds, John Talks every day on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Pocahontas is on the warpath.
yeah. Wow.
Well, here's the thing.
Fantastic.
I think these people. And then the next story, which was only about 10 minutes, was, of course, Ukraine, Russia bad, Putin evil, that whole thing.
Right.
And then the entire rest. Oh, and there was one or two. There was like about 30 seconds about a gender affirming, I don't know, the threat to gender affirming. Facilities and schools, and then only about a 30 second. Then almost the entire rest of the show, which is maybe another 10, 15 minutes, was devoted to the New York Times book called This Too Shall Not Pass about the January 6th insurrection
and the threat of Trump.
That's NPR Nightly News.
Trump.
Tell me that any sane person listening to this, I was surprised that they made no mention of the Mina Jankovic story, but maybe that played last night. But
who's she again?
The one who's been appointed.
Oh yeah.
As the
disinfo czar.
Yeah, disinfo czar for the Department of Homeland Security. They didn't even mention it tonight, so I don't know. They might make all that disappear. I wouldn't be surprised if you see stories just disappear.
Yeah.
And then, we withdrew that, or we decided not to do that, or who knows?
Hey, Lynn, have you seen the building, the new United Nations building in West Africa?
Where in West Africa? Which country do you know?
It doesn't say, but wherever it is, you should take a peek at it. I know you're not looking at your computer right now, but...
No, what? I'm going to check it out. You mean the architecture or...
Yeah. Yeah, it's 666. It's a spiro-gyra type building. It's bizarre.
But are you sure you're not reading that 666 into... Are you sure you're not...
No, there's 666. You got to take a look at it. You got to see it to believe it.
I'll check it out.
There's no functionality for this building to have this kind of layout, but it can only be for occult purposes, as far as I can tell.
Well, you know, we know the United Nations history of occult involvement goes back to its very origins with Alice Bailey and the Lucis Trust. And they have an office there in the UN. I think they have diplomatic status or something. But yeah, we've known that there is a Luciferian element there. I guess they bought their way in because they had a lot of money.
Hey, can I play a video, Roe versus Wade, explain? Because I don't think anyone knows what it means. So here's a little animated video.
In 1973, the United States Supreme Court issued its decision in Roe versus Wade. The effect of the court's ruling was immediate and far-reaching, expanding the right to privacy under the 14th Amendment and altering the legal landscape on the issue of abortion across the country. Norma McCorvey, a single pregnant woman in Texas, sought an abortion. At the time, Texas law prohibited abortions unless performed or obtained to save the life of the mother. To protect her privacy, McCorvey filed suit in federal court under the name Jane Roe. The defendant was Henry Wade, the district attorney in the Texas county where McCorvey sought the abortion. Roe argued that the abortion ban was unconstitutional and asked the court to issue an order that would stop Texas from enforcing the law. The district court found the Texas restriction on abortion unconstitutional on the grounds that the statute was too vague and overly broad and impinged on the rights reserved to people under the Ninth Amendment. However, the court didn't issue an injunction to bar Texas from enforcing its ban, so Roe's options in Texas really didn't change. Arguing that the district court's lack of injunctive relief was insufficient, Roe appealed directly to the Supreme Court.
That's it?
That's what I mean.
It just does. Here's another explanation. Let's try this.
Most Supreme Court decisions are granular, little noticed interpretations of the law and Constitution, but a few are landmarks. Roe v. Wade was a landmark. It effectively legalized abortion across the United States. Here are the facts and players in the case. Jane Roe was actually Norma McCorvey. She was a Texan in her early 20s who wanted to terminate an unwanted pregnancy in 1969. Abortion was legal in Texas at the time, but only for the purpose of saving a woman's life. That was not the issue for McCorvey. Her life was not at risk. She tried unsuccessfully to get an illegal abortion and was referred to two attorneys interested in challenging anti-abortion laws. The Wade in Roe v. Wade was Henry Wade, the district attorney of Dallas County, who enforced that Texas abortion law. McCorvey soon filed a case against him. The Supreme Court agreed in 1971 to hear the case, and on January 22nd, 1973, struck down the Texas law in a 7-2 decision. Justice Harry Blackmun, wrote for the majority opinion and declared a woman's right to privacy under the 14th Amendment superseded a state's right to ban abortion. The court set different rules for each trimester. In the first trimester, the choice to end pregnancy was entirely up to the mother. In the second trimester, the government could regulate but not ban abortion in order to protect the mother's health. In the third trimester, the state could prohibit abortion to protect a fetus that could survive outside the womb, except when the mother's health is in danger. Justices Byron White and William Rehnquist dissented. They basically held the argument of privacy went far beyond the intentions of the constitutional framers, an argument that could signal the grounds for challenges to Roe. The two justices also stated the court's decision did not stick to the specific facts of this case because Roe was not in her first trimester at the time of the litigation. Public opinion was quickly shifting. In August 1972, Americans opposed legalized abortion, 46-42%. But by April 1973, it was 52-41 in favor. In the years since, Roe's been modified but not overturned. A notable example was in 1992, a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey. For all intents and purposes, this is the new standard by which abortion cases are judged. The focus this time wasn't privacy. It was roadblocks, which had been intentionally set up to make it harder to get an abortion. In a 5-4 ruling, the court said restrictions are unconstitutional if they place an undue burden on a woman. Support for Roe v. Wade remains strong. A Kaiser Family Foundation poll in June 2018 found that 67% of Americans do not want the Supreme Court to overturn the ruling, while 29% do. The question now, of course, is what the Supreme Court will do with a solid conservative majority.
Oh, there you go. Boy, that is... I don't really see how the privacy thing has anything to do with abortion, but they made it... That's what I mean. I didn't think it really addressed it at all.
Well, Henry, just parenthetically, Henry Wade, the Dallas district attorney referred to there, was, of course, the one who was there for the November 1963 alleged assassination of JFK. So Henry Wade qualifies as a lifetime actor, for sure.
Right, right. What did he have to do with JFK?
Well, he was the Dallas district attorney at the time, so signed off, for example, on allowing the evidence to be shipped out of Dallas on a plane, which is insane.
Oh, right.
That's crazy. Yeah, he had to sign off on that because that would have been his. The corpses and everything else were in his custody, but no, they... I'm just saying, this guy was thoroughly compromised. So they probably handpicked him to try this case.
Right. You're right. So he was a federal insider, sort of an infiltrator into the state,
or
co-opted by the feds to do their I see.
The choice of Texas and his selection to argue the case before the Supreme Court tells me it was scripted.
Good point. Very good. I like that.
But yeah, wedge issue. But the thing is, it's so transparent that even people who are, say pro-choice or roughly pro-choice, or people who maybe have mixed feelings, whatever, they're going to see how cynically and nakedly, transparently, the Democrats are using this issue to trigger people, as Elizabeth Warren.
No, I agree. Oh, yeah, and she's playing her part in the acting. But let's get back to Roe versus Wade for a minute. It really became a privacy issue, yet the judges were giving parameters on abortion. What is it? So the judges really made the law, or they really made they're not supposed to make laws, but the privacy, the way it was angled, that the woman Jane Roe's right to privacy basically nullified and declared the abortion law unconstitutional. That's what I meant, that it's so ridiculous.
They were arguing that the state was infringing on her
right to privacy.
Mostly under the 4th Amendment, but they also mentioned the 7th Amendment. Is that right?
I thought I heard 9th.
Yeah. 9th Amendment. Okay, yeah, 9th Amendment, perhaps.
But then they actually made parameters for when you could have an abortion. What did that have to do with privacy?
Let me tell you why they argued it that way. Because they basically used the same logic that was applied in Griswold versus Connecticut. That was the one that quite a few years earlier, maybe about 10 years earlier, ruled that the states couldn't regulate or outlaw birth control or contraception, Griswold versus Connecticut. So what the court did was it said, well, this abortion situation, the closest analog we can come to any prior decision would be the one over Griswold versus Connecticut, which, and there they decided that this the state was imposing on your right to privacy by trying to regulate the use of contraception and birth control. So it may have been outlawed in some places, I don't know, or regulated in such a way that it limited access to it. So that's an important case.
Versus
Connecticut. Yeah, that's how they went off on the right to privacy. But you're right. In order to do that, they said, at what point is your right to privacy outweighed by the proximity of infanticide to this thing? And so they came up with first trimester, second trimester, third trimester, and the concept of, and that led to the concept of fetal viability. But remember, as our quote unquote science has advanced in the decades since that 73 decision, our notion of fetal viability has like backed up and backed up and backed. I mean, now we have in vitro fertilization, we have ex vitro, you know, now we literally probably could grow humans in a test tube.
Right. So fetal viability goes down to really inception.
Well, it's a matter of
Right. Right. Because it's viable because they can keep it alive outside the womb artificially.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm looking at something like Brave New World where all the babies are, or Gattaca, I guess, or I'm trying to think, or one of those futuristic dystopian sci-fi films.
Yeah, Brave New World's good. Yeah, you're right.
You know.
That would overturn that. But it still seems very strange that the parameters that's set out by the Supreme Court justices, to me, it's they're just making laws. And I don't think,
because they don't give a flying rat's ass about the Constitution. These are nothing but dirty, corrupt shysters who survive politically. Look, I remember the resignation of Abe Fortas because they found corruption in his background when LBJ was president. These guys, there's nothing special. They're nothing but shysters. Most of the time, they're mediocre lawyers. And they get a lifetime appointment. Just think about that. What? At the highest court in the land, they get a lifetime appointment? I don't have a high opinion of the Supreme Court as an institution. I really consider it decrepit. I mean, maybe you could overhaul it, but I look at things like Plessy versus Ferguson, which basically legalized, segregation of public facilities like streetcars and trains for it was finally turned over in 1954, for more than half a century. I think Plessy versus Ferguson was 1898. Segregated railroad cars and so forth, where you had to sit in the back, and segregated water fountain, separate water fountains, separate bathroom, public facilities, all that stuff, separate. And then 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, which had the Supreme Court was the one that gave us the legacy of a century of Jim Crow segregation. And before that, the Supreme Court gave us a Civil War, the Tawney Court. In Dred Scott, 1854. So I don't have a high opinion. I have to tell you, in the aftermath of the Civil War, no one had a very high opinion of the Supreme. It didn't even exist during the Civil War. It just ceased to exist during the Civil War. And then for a few years after, it had like zero credibility because it had legitimized an institution that the war ended up abolishing, slavery. More than that, the Dred Scott decision said that it made it a racial thing, strictly racial, said even freed blacks had no rights that any white man was bound to respect, which is pretty shocking when you think about it. But because they knew they were mandating a civil war over this when Tawney issued that decision. It was really reckless and irresponsible. And also it had to do with the Fugitive Slave Act, which was federalization of capturing runaway slaves, which is property. Believe me, the Civil War, the war between the states, there's a whole argument we can have about that and how, in a sense, certain people in the South brought it on as surely as abolitionists did in the North. They wanted it so they could get their Golden Circle Empire.
Okay, let's get to that. You sent me a couple links, so let's bring them up. And the first link says on Facebook, Feces Book, I call it, Russia, state-controlled media. This link is from a publisher Facebook believes may be partially or wholly under the editorial control of the Russian government.
Oh, they added a tag to it. Was that from Pravda or you? Or I might have
RBTH, Russia Beyond. You sent me a link.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was just a historical... Okay, wait a minute. That piece was published... Was it on the...
It's just a website, RBTU. I never heard of Russia Beyond. RBTH, rather. RBTH.com, Russia Beyond.
But the link I sent was to a very old historical event.
Yeah, I know. But like it's the website that triggered it.
Oh, they don't like the website.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that item I sent was probably 5, 10 years, who knows how many. It's a few years old, right?
Well, it says it was published on April 29th, 2022, so maybe they're rewriting history.
Okay, so it's a current one. Which one? Is that the one about the secret treaty of Rapallo?
Yes.
Or about... Okay.
Yes.
All right, that's World
War I. By signing an agreement with Germany in 1922, the Bolsheviks ruined the plans of the Entente powers to keep holding the Soviet Union in the status of a pariah state.
Yeah, I guess that would be sort of pro-Soviet in its interpretation. I have to concede that much. What it amounted to was this. Under the terms of the Versailles Treaty, and probably per Bernard Baruch, Germany was to be stripped. It wasn't allowed to maintain a standing army of more than, maybe 20,000 or so. It was, they couldn't have tanks. They couldn't do this. They couldn't do that. Basically, it just totally... How do I put this? It completely crippled them, not only industrially but militarily in many respects. And so the new Weimar government's military went and negotiated, because they had already negotiated a peace treaty with the Bolsheviks in 1917 called the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk. This is important because the Allies wanted Russia to stay in the war, but Lenin and Trotsky and the Bolsheviks promised the people of Russia that they were going to, one way or another, they were going to end Russia's participation in this war and bring the troops home. Peace, land, and bread was their program. So they negotiated a separate peace with Germany, and ultimately that led to an attempted assassination of Lenin. He was shot. So we are told, allegedly, he looks pretty sick to me when you see him in those pictures. I think he really was shot.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they executed Fania Kaplan and her fellow socialist revolutionaries for plotting the assassination. But there was already a history of covert secret cooperation between this fledgling Soviet Republic, which nobody expected to survive, and the remnant of the German general staff after World War One, when Germany was to be completely crippled, so the German general staff started secretly training their troops on Russian soil, on Soviet soil at that point. So I point that out because it gives you some context for the subsequent Hitler-Stalin Pact or Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact that was signed in 1939, September of 1939, that led almost immediately to the invasion of Poland and the war. These things occur, in other words, and then to think about the fact that here was the Soviet Union supplying the Third Reich with all kinds of vital raw materials, coal and oil and other things, fuel and so forth, in that period, while they were both conducting a proxy war in Finland called the Winter War, and then within about a year and a half, the Third Reich turned around and invaded Russia, supposedly surprising Stalin, taking Stalin by surprise. That is to say, I have read that there were still Soviet rail shipments of supplies heading west to the Third Reich at the very moment that German troops were crossed over from Western Poland into the Soviet zone and then started marching into Russia, and to Southern Russia to take over the Baku oil fields and everything else.
Yeah.
So you could say, what's planned? what's engineered, what isn't. Was Stalin really surprised by this? It's kind of, he must have had some inkling that this could happen. But do you see how things can flip like 180 degrees in the space of a year and a half? I brought up the war in Finland because it reminds me very much of the proxy war. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Now, just so to get some context here, is this stuff you've always studied, World War One and World War Two? Has it always been an interest of yours?
Obsessively.
Oh, okay.
Obsessively. My handicap is that I have to question every detail of the official narrative.
Yes.
Every detail.
Yes, yes.
And then I have to reverse engineer what I think probably really happened or what the realm of possibilities might be based on the documents that are available. Like, so right now, for example, I'm reading a book that was published in 1941.
Ah.
Before Pearl Harbor, called The Riddle of the Reich. This is by two journalists who, you know, they went to Germany between 1938 and 1941, and they came back and wrote this book. And each chapter of it describes, you know, what the third, you know, what was going on in Germany and in Austria, and then, of course, in the Sudetenland and Czechoslovakia. And one of the chapters is about, you know, who was it who has argued, I guess John LeBon has argued that warfare is really a controlled demolition and population relocation.
Yeah, strategic relocation. Yeah.
Strategic relocation. And one whole chapter proves strategic relocation of populations, because not only were Slavic peoples and certain other, like gypsies and other groups, moved out of Poland and areas of Czechoslovakia and that the Germans moved into early on, but German-speaking populations that lived in Hungary, Romania, Western Poland, Silesia, had to pick up and move back into the German Reich, because Hitler basically wanted to try to consolidate all the authentic Germans back in home German home in the homeland.
Right. Yeah.
So this forced relocation of populations was not only applied to Jews and Gypsies and Slavs and Poles, but to German-speaking people as well, who had to move in the opposite direction. You know, in other words, when the Germans came in, immediately they said, well, we got to clear this area of the Jews especially and the Poles and move them out and resettle it, because the prime agricultural real estate they wanted to resettle with German colonists. That aspect of the Third Reich program was called Lebensraum,
right,
which is room to grow, room to reproduce. But like I say, it also involved the compulsory movement, demanding. Now think about this. Think about, you're in a German-speaking community. I guess you could compare this to the Amish in Pennsylvania. I don't think they still speak German as much, but you know, all through Eastern.
Yeah, by the way, someone was brought that up on another audio, that someone thought that most of the Amish were Dutch, but most of Pennsylvania, it's German.
You know what that is? That's exactly like Americans calling the native tribes Indians. Like, they ain't from India. That's stupid. And what happened, the German-speaking settlers who were invited to settle in Pennsylvania by the Quakers and William Penn came from Bohemia, Moravia, Hungary, and Germany also. They were a minority religion, actually, that were considered heretics.
The Lutheran?
The Lutheran persecuted them.
Oh, the Lutheran? Persecuted the Mennonites.
I'm talking about the Mennonites.
Oh, the Mennonites. Mennonite.
Yeah, they belong. The Bohemian Brethren, the Moravian Brethren. They didn't practice the sacraments in the same way. They had their own way of life, and they were involved in. They were martyred and persecuted by both the mainstream Protestant and especially the Catholic Church during the 30 Years' War and so forth. So anyway, the ones that settled in Pennsylvania were called Deutsch, which is German for German. But stupid, ignorant Americans said, oh, they're Dutch. They're the Pennsylvania Dutch.
Oh, I see how it works.
Yeah,
okay,
that's... Oh, isn't that nice with the wooden shoes, the Pennsylvania Dutch? No, no. And the hexes on their barns and all that, you know. No, no, they were German-speaking immigrants from not only Germany, but Eastern and Central Europe.
Okay, I gotcha. That's funny. That's funny. Okay.
So, you know, it's just like Americans who say, I had somebody correct me once on this. I said Nevada. And they said, no, it's Nevada. Nevada. So, well, how can that, I said, how can that be? It was Spanish for, nieve is Spanish for snow. Nevada means snow cover because they saw these beautiful snow caps.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's good.
Right.
Neve, so, right.
Right. Anybody, any native Spanish speaker would say Nevada. Nevada. But now, it's got to be Nevada if you're an American, because Americans are freaking ignorant of the origins of the names of these places for the most part.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Because we're provincials, you know, relative to the rest of the world. Americans don't even, I don't even think Americans could have, most Americans could have identified where Ukraine was on a map before.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the reason I got into this, I don't know if you've been listening to me for the last couple of weeks, is I was trying to decode why...
The whole hoax.
Yeah, well, Ernst Zundel specifically.
So yeah, I was trying, Ernst Zundel and Fred Leuchter.
Right, I was trying to figure out why these guys
David
are
Cole.
So persecuted in Canada. Well, just Ernst Zundel, because I want to know what the real story was, because I want to know if he was real, if this was another psyop or what. But when I started watching some of his stuff, I thought, wow, he's really just trying to expose what the Allies, for the second time at least, did to Germany. And he calls it the German Holocaust. So I thought, why is... this not widely known.
The Morgenthau Plan?
Right.
Well, the Morgenthau Plan ended up being superseded by the Marshall Plan. That's something he kind of leaves out of that, because, yes, that was Morgenthau's idea. They were going to strip Germany of... they would never have allowed the reunification of Germany like we saw in 1989.
Right.
They wouldn't...
What about the book Germany Must Perish? Did you ever read that one?
I'm familiar with it. I haven't read it, but, yeah. You know, Judea declares war on Germany. Well, I've listened to Benjamin Friedman's lectures, and he discusses Germany Must Perish. And also Myron. I mean, there are Jews even who talked about this in great detail. But, you know, the problem with the Third Reich's policy is that it was racial. I mean, you know... They were saying if you've even got one great grandparent who was Jewish, that makes you Jewish, and therefore you're now a second class citizen, or you got to get out, or
right.
I mean, if they hadn't racial, but then, you know, race hygiene was a cornerstone of their regime. But then again, race hygiene was a cornerstone of eugenics here in the United States.
Right.
The Germans didn't invent it; they got it from Dorothy Sanger and the progressives, because it was considered progressive. You know, these ideas were considered progressive. So, but of course, I think the Third Reich took it. But, you know, it's very interesting. From time to time, like Goering, who was probably number two or number three in the Third Reich, you had Himmler, Goering, Goebbels. Goering's, one of his top aircraft engineers, happened to be of Jewish parentage, and he wasn't going to give him up. And he went to Hitler, and Hitler said, well, Aryanize him, just change his papers. So now he's Aryan.
Oh, wow. They
would do that.
That's ethnic cleansing right there.
Well, somebody changes their name, it's so ridiculous. How many immigrants came here, and the officials at Ellis Island, wherever, couldn't spell their name because it started with a SZ or something if they came from Poland.
Right.
So they took a completely different
name. They just anglicized it so to make it easy.
Right. This is what bothers me about this puke that was testifying. Alejandro Mayorga. Did you see this guy?
No.
Getting questioned by the senators about... the appointment of this disinformation czar and the situation down at the Mexico border, which I believe is real. I think it's real.
Right. I heard there's a flood of refugees ready to pour over after this title, whatever it is. So the title 21?
Title 42.
Title 42?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, which was just a COVID restriction, I think. But this, maybe I'm wrong about this. You probably have some Hispanic listeners that might want to straighten me out on this. But my people came here from Eastern Europe and Russia, Poland and Russia, and Romania. And they gave their kids American names. So if you come here from a Spanish-speaking country, why would you continue to use the name Alejandro? Do people still call you Alex or Alec for short?
Oh, I see.
I it just grates on me to hear that. It grates on me because what he continues to use in it, why not Alexander Mayorkas or Alex Mayorkas? Trump had a cabinet official. He's the one who negotiated that sweetheart deal for Jeffrey Epstein named Alex Acosta, not Alejandro Acosta. I'm sure
right,
in Spanish his name would be Alejandro Acosta.
Right, you're
but
right.
But everybody called him Alex Acosta. Now, Alejandro Mayorkas, we've got to emphasize that he's not using the English version of Alexander, which is a Greek name, really.
Yeah, that's true.
No, and that to me tells you what's going on here.
Yeah, divide and conquer over language and culture.
It's all about divide and conquer.
Yeah,
it's all about it. And this DHS, this is a sick, twisted. This needs to be abolished. It's unconstitutional.
I agree.
Just a federal,
and it's just growing and growing. It's like cancer.
Well, I'm glad that this business about the disinformation czar has come out now, because maybe people are going to step back and say, you know something, we don't need this thing. They impose it on us right after. See, go back to 9/11 again, see? To me, anyone they appoint to work in DHS is a 9/11 coward, a 9/11 liar, and a 9/11 traitor, especially if they're over a certain age. Because they know those were controlled demolitions.
Yep.
Don't kid yourself. Alejandro Mayorkas knows those were controlled demolitions. He's a criminal like the rest of them. And I believe we could prosecute him if we had the muscle. And I would, too. I'd nail his ass, this filthy traitor.
I'm glad you brought it back to 9/11, because that's what this show started off at. So that was perfect. Well done. That was good.
Well, I'm not going to let go of it. I'm not going to let go of Sandy Hook.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to judge everybody. The Boston Marathon, I'm not going to let go of these things because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Actually, time has run out. There is no more excuse for this. If people don't know, then they just haven't taken a look, or they don't care. Probably they don't care. Because you do have a prostituted nation here in the United States. That is to say, it doesn't cost much to get people to lie. And really, who has the time to look into? If you said to people, hey, you know, this situation in Ukraine, it didn't start yesterday or last month. It's been going on for 8 years. There was a coup back in 2014 that the CIA ran, and they handpicked the successor government. And that's what this clown Zelensky comes out of. And not only that, he is really corrupt, and he's owned by this oligarch, Kolomoisky, a Ukrainian oligarch, billionaire oligarch. And the United States won't even allow Kolomoisky to set foot on American soil, won't even grant him a visa because he's considered a criminal. Put this together in your head. Anyone who would even take a second look at Zelensky would see, oh, the guy who runs him is this oligarch, Kolomoisky, Ukrainian oligarch, and to the United States Justice Department and State Department, he is officially a criminal. How do you reconcile that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, the Ukraine thing is, it's a foobar. Anybody out there who is, you know, waving these blue and yellow flags or getting behind this Ukraine thing, and especially in the Republican and conservative camp, oh, they ought to be crucified for getting behind this phony war. Well, we can argue about how phony it is. I mean, I've been looking at endless videos from Ukraine. Some of them have been discredited as fake, but others show real destruction. So I have no way.
So the question is, who did the destructing? Yeah,
exactly.
You don't know.
It was the Azov Battalion.
Yeah, you can't know. You can't know.
They fly Pelosi over there. Is that right? Who else went over there with her?
We're told
it could be a green screen, right?
Well, it wouldn't be Joe. I don't think Joe would make it.
Yeah, Joe is, I'm convinced that they're replacing Joe with actors because
Yeah, I know. When I'm looking at some, when did you watch the thing with the correspondence? He looked totally. It's just the mannerisms were slightly different. He was had more energy. I don't know if they shot him up with adrenochrome or it is another actor. You think there could be a couple actors, maybe Tim Allen or Jim Carrey? They're both wearing the mask. Maybe
I've seen they're getting sloppy about the masking.
Oh,
I saw a recent Fauci interview where you can see the mask. You can see the line of the right where the neck meets the collar. And I'll tell you why they do that. Guess people would say, well, why don't they extend the mask down to below the collar? Well, you can't move your neck around very easily if you do that. Mm-hmm. You've got to slip on the mask but still move your neck.
I just watched the video that from Mr. E, and it looked like the mask went down over just above his breast.
I'm talking about a different one. I'm talking about this one of Fauci.
No, I know, but... It could go down to the chest. The mask.
The line, in this case, the line that you see is at the where the neck meets the collar.
Right, I get you.
In fact, it comes out over top of the tie.
So there's a Fauci masker out there.
Yeah, I don't think they care. I really. You ask, how could they be so sloppy? And why don't they repixelize before they release it? Or why would they release something like that? Why wouldn't they do a second take? I don't think they care at this point.
I never even considered a Fauci actor. Okay.
Have you seen this one?
No, I don't know anything about it. I'd like to see it, yeah, because this is interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's an interview with. It's very recent because he's.
Do you think Biden was really falling up the stairs, or was that a Jim Carrey kind of thing? Because
it
seemed too energetic for a 78-year-old to be bouncing back that quick.
There's messaging going on here, and the messaging going on is that the institutions are rotting.
Yeah, that I like that. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And as you have said yourself. They're on a timetable. They're on a schedule, and that demands discrediting legacy institutions, media, legacy institutions, so that people will be, and also to create enough of a chaos and misery index that people start casting about looking for someone to come and save them, and that's where the Klaus Schwabs of the world come in with their program.
Right. Right. Okay.
Global governance. International. Socialism, as opposed to national socialism.
Yes. So you agree? So did you hear me say that, or are you just coming up with that on your own? Because I agree with that.
I think I've heard you discuss this before. They're both collectivist ideologies, but the object of the collective is a little more localized in the case of national socialism. It's an interesting question. We can get into this whole thing about the Chinese vax.
Innovax.
Yeah, Sinovac. I mean, if China is having lockdowns now, why isn't, you would think there would be an argument out there somewhere about if the vaccine really does, nobody believes this anymore. How can anybody believe it? If the vaccine really does prevent the virus or mitigate the virus, why are there different vaccines? Why do the Russians and the Chinese have a different vaccine than Europe and the United States?
Yeah. By the way, I'm looking at the lady. I just typed Fauci into YouTube. Is it Dr. Jerome Adams on Dr. Fauci in the end of the pandemic? Is that it, do you think?
No.
Well, it's important for people to understand that they...
Oh. Okay. That could be it. But the one... what's the name of this one? I should post that link. I can't remember the name. I saw a BitChute version of it. I don't know if it's on.
Is it CNN medical analyst disagrees with Fauci's COVID announcement? I'm just curious if we're looking at different people. Because some of these, just these still images of Fauci's, they look slightly different. But I can't tell if it's just because
this
I'm
is
looking
a video.
For
mm-hmm. This is a video, and it's for a few minutes there. And as he talks, you can see the neckline moving over top of the collar. I don't know. I suppose you could simulate that as a digital effect, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this looks it looks pretty damning. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't think they credit people with paying very close attention.
Yeah, for sure. And the ones that do, they know we're not going to get our message out because we seem crazy for finding it.
Well, people are in really, really serious denial. They don't want to acknowledge that we're being played. And people don't want to... That's a rough one. You know, sitting in the car there, listening to him, you know, tune in NPR and wanting to say, what are you listening to? But, you know, I don't know what you're going to do. I have to write off those people. The people that are still listening to NPR at this late date, yeah, they might come around, but at this point, they're not of much value to us because their cognitive powers, from listening to NPR tonight, I got to believe anybody who's still taking them seriously is really messed up. It doesn't have a clue. Doesn't have a clue. Now, there are probably people who are listening to them to get the messaging, but they don't believe it. I don't think very many of them really believe any of it.
You know, it's really hard to type in Fauci and mask now because, of course, mask is the word of the...
Right,
you
can't, right.
Yeah. But if you type in latex mask, the latest thing I got is from 10 months ago.
Well, no, mask and deep fake is what you want.
All right.
Mask, deep fake.
I think I'm watching it right now. This is from 10 months ago.
Oh, it's from that far back. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes,
oh
that's
my
it.
God.
You got it.
Johnson,
you got
oh
it.
Oh, my God. What is that?
Now, I hope someone didn't take a regular video on this.
Yeah, it has that appearance that
is
it could be messed with.
That's what I'm saying. You don't know what people could be putting out there. They could be digitally messing around with it. But tell me that doesn't look like the thing is moving over top of his collar. It is.
Well, it does, but except there's this black line that might be alteration.
It could be a digital suit.
What is that?
What is that?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It looks a little like a digital effect, but I'll put it in the show notes anyway. Anyone wants to check it out.
I thought the same thing about the video of Albert Bourla.
So much like this.
Right.
Oh, but this, you can see it.
Yeah,
they do something with the chin, though. Yeah, I don't know. Got 31,000 views, so people love
visor,
it.
Well, you know, I hope somebody... I wish people could source these things and validate them. Because, you know, anybody can... You're right. Anybody can create a weird digital, you know, fake job. But the one with Albert Bourla was really kind of weird because you could see the side of his neck throbbing. And you wonder, you know, is that an artifact of digital, you know?
Yeah, who are these people? Who are these people that are running our lives?
Well, as we refer to as a reality breakdown. The point at which the simulation flows over into the reality and people start running around with real rifles shooting real bullets. You know, there is a point where that happens. You could say, who would think in a million years that Ukrainians could do anything meaningful to resist the kind of army that the Russians have, right?
Right.
I mean, who would be crazy enough to say, well, I'm going to stay behind and fight? Well, what are you going to fight with? I mean, unless you're trained to use Javelin missiles and strategic weapons and so forth. I mean, come on. They set up the television cameras, and that's where they simulate a resistance. And the Russians have to be careful. They don't want to, you know, I sent you that newsreel, that video of the bombing of open cities during the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and because it's important to understand that it's true. A poison gas was first used in the trenches of World War I, as far as we know, pioneered by the Germans, and in particular a Jewish Nobel Prize winner named Fritz Haber. He won like the 1909 Nobel Prize for synthesizing ammonia. He was one who suggested the use of poison gas to the Kaiser. It's interesting to note how many Jewish advisors and influencers were around the Kaiser. I think even members of his family.
That's what Ernst Zundel was saying.
Yeah. But then, of course, the Kaiser, when he went into exile after World War One in Holland, and I think he was a little bit bitter because the Nazis never invited him to come back, you know, the Hohenzollerns. They never really restored the Hohenzollern monarchy. And he, in the end, I think toward the end, Wilhelm, he ended up sort of blaming Jews for dragging Germany into the war. It's so weird when you consider the fact that there's no way Germany could have gone to war without, even though there were easily many, many less than a million Jews in Germany, in Imperial Germany, maybe less than half a million. There weren't that many. Maybe some more in Austria, which was at that time the Austro-Hungarian Empire run by the Habsburgs. But it's when you consider the fact that the British couldn't have fought without Rothschild financing. Germany couldn't have gone to war without all those Jews in the Social Democratic Party and in the elite German ruling class that voted war credits and said, okay, we're going to do it. That's insane. But then again, when you consider the fact that Kaiser Wilhelm was first cousin to King George and to Tsar Nicholas. First cousins.
These guys
they played together as children.
All related, these elites, huh? They're just gangs fighting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they send out the little people to do the fighting and the dying. It's just crazy. It's just really crazy when you think about it.
What's this video about, Spanish Civil War International Intervention Part 2?
Yeah, the Spanish Civil War was really the opening. It was really the beginning of World War II. That is to say, some would argue that it didn't really start with Hitler's invasion of Poland in 1939, but that rather it had already been going on since 1936.
Oh, okay.
There is a long history that precedes this. Churchill, of course, from the air. Now, remember, this is the first time that airplanes were used in warfare in World War One, and so during the 20s, they were really being modernized. Sir Churchill, for example, used poison gas to suppress an insurrection in Iraq, which so you're using it on brown people there.
All right.
Not on other Europeans. People were so horrified by the use of poison gas in the trenches, they said, well, never again will we allow this. That's why poison gas didn't show up in the trenches in World War II, I think, because both sides knew that whoever started it, then the other would. But it was Fritz Haber who suggested to the Kaiser that the Germans use it. They were suffering heavy casualties. They weren't winning on the Western Front, and so we'll use poison gas. But bombing cities from the air, there may have been Zeppelins that dropped incendiaries on London in World War One, strategic air bombing didn't really exist at that point. It was, in fact, the Italians who bombed open-air villages and towns in Ethiopia when they conquered Ethiopia in, 1935. And then the Spanish Civil War. And that's why I wanted you to watch that video, because it shows you the history of how strategic bombing of cities really started. Who were the first to do it? And I got to admit, it was the Germans and Italians that started it. So when the Allies turned around and did it to Hamburg and Berlin and Dresden, the precedent had already been established by the Third Reich. But, you know, you cannot isolate, just as I pointed to the secret Rapallo Treaty of 1922, it was almost like a precedent for Hitler and Stalin to turn around in 1939, which would have been 10 and 17 years later, and sign a pact dividing up Poland. And you say, well, why? These are the Nazis and the Soviet Union are signing it. You know, it's crazy. Yeah. But when you read the accounts of that, you realize how arbitrarily things can be turned upside down. And the populations of these countries are expected to turn on a dime and flip 180 degrees. Because you have to ask yourself, what did the average German or the average Russian think when they heard that Molotov and Ribbentrop had signed a non-aggression pact and that the Soviet Union was now going to supply Nazi Germany with raw material to conduct its war in the West against Britain and France? I mean, what would they think about that? When they'd been, when, you know, communists and Nazis have been fighting each other in the streets of Germany up until, you know, all through the 20s and into the early 30s. I guess what I'm getting, the Hitler-Stalin pact here in the United States, can you imagine that you were a communist here in the United States? And believe me, they were a lot bigger then. Not like they are now. I mean, they really had a following.
Uh-huh.
They were organizing unions. They were leading strikes because of the Depression.
Right.
Of the Depression. And they had recruited heavily in Hollywood and among intellectuals and writers. And, of course, since they were the only ones who were against segregation, they had recruited some very high-profile black intellectuals, W.E.B. Du Bois, and Richard Wright, and Paul Robeson.
It's amazing the allies people make when they find a plank in the manifesto that they like. They join some of the strangest alliances.
Well, the left, we could see the left is. The left was always supposed to be against imperialist wars, against
right.
war. And look at them now. They're like gung-ho, but most of them are gung-ho for this Ukraine, which is nothing but NATO trying to encroach on Russian territory. That's what it is. And now they're saying, oh, we're gonna enlist Sweden and Finland in NATO now. What a brilliant idea. You know, let's just stir up trouble. And we're going to pay for it, I guess. How many billion? What did he say? 33 billion.
33. Yeah, here we go.
Here we go again.
Yeah, they never stop.
It's a heist.
Yeah, it's
a heist.
Yeah, there's so much going on that we have no idea what's going on. There's so much behind the scenes. So much money being exchanged and territory and people are moving around and. They're bringing in digital ID in the Ukraine of all places. It's just
they're pioneering digital ID.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I point that out to people. I say, oh yeah, this guy's outlawed 11 political parties. He shut down newspapers and any independent radio or TV stations. It's places a dictatorship. There's nothing democratic about it. But you're defending democracy. You know what it is? The hypocrisy. Just like this business about the abortion, the Roe v. Wade thing. It's got to be striking some people out here that, you know, Elizabeth Warren and all the rest of them that are getting hysterical over the possible reversal of Roe v. Wade, they're the ones that want to fire you for not taking a mandatory vaccine.
Oh, I know. It's just crazy, the hypocrisy.
Your body? Oh, it's your body, your choice?
And it sure has turned off the vaccines are poison information. That's not getting through anymore. They can change the channel so quickly in the media. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's the weird. Well, that's the Orwellian aspect of this. Their ability to flip the script. Flip the script like 180 degrees.
In a second. In a day. What's tomorrow's topic going to be? You think we're going to be stuck on the roll or about this so-called leaked document for at least a week? Probably.
Yeah, well, you know, what gets me is how they've got everybody plugged in. I listen to a lot of like right-wing AM talk radio, and boy, all they're talking about is the midterm elections. Oh, we're going to show them the midterm elections. Oh, we're going to win the midterm elections. And I'm thinking to myself, guys, they can rig that as easily as they rigged the last one.
Of course, yeah.
So this is kind of, we're building up to an explosion here because this whole host of right-wing AM talk radio hosts, I can name them.
Oh, Bannon seems to be the biggest one that everyone likes to talk about.
Oh, yeah, he's over in Japan, right?
Oh, is he? I don't even follow any of these guys. It's not interesting to me.
Yeah, well, I do listen to, well, you know, I could, there are like Dan Bongino, Ted Starnes, Who were some of the popular ones? The ones on Newsmax, you know. They're all Mike Gallagher, Hugh Hewitt, all the ones, all the old Rush Limbaugh crowd, like Rob Carson. You know, there's a whole bunch of people who worshipped Rush Limbaugh, and they're out there, and they're you know, fulfilling his legacy, supposedly. They are really psyching up their listeners for the midterm election. They're really going to be recruiting thousands upon thousands of people into the Republican effort to win the November elections and take over the House and the Senate. What happens if there's another? What happens if things don't work out for them? Do you know? Can you imagine the rage, the disillusionment, the sheer fury that's going to erupt among conservatives and Republicans if they feel that another election has been stolen from them? That'd be it. You know, there's no recovery from that. So in a way, I feel like these radio personalities are being kind of irresponsible because they're building up very, very unrealistic, fantastic illusions among their listeners and their followers. And if you listen to them, to the people who call in to talk to them, and oh, we're going to show them, oh, we're going to, and right now, like today, I understand, or yesterday, today, or upcoming, are all kinds of Republican, there are primaries taking place now. Is that right in the United States, in various states?
No idea. I'm not following you.
Well, they're going to pick the Republican primaries apparently are a big deal because everybody's running around, you know, sniffing at Trump's ass trying to get his endorsement. You know, that becomes a big thing. Can you get the Trump endorsement?
Right.
Some people, and Trump is so shallow, in several cases he's endorsed people who are total phonies.
Yeah, and the bottom line is he keeps talking about the damn vax and get the vax.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I just watched another pretty good podcast tonight out of Canada called Eyes is Watching. This guy really understands what's going on, and he was playing some Trump video where the guy's saying, oh, I know you guys don't like me talking about the vax, but get the vax, and I saved lives because I got it out so early, and oh my goodness. That's all that matters to me, is if he talks like that, I can just discount everything he has to say. So, and plus when he's dancing around the stage, I just can't stop thinking about the whole, what is this creature? What is he? He's another one of them that's just sort of this inverted or
he's the
I don't
most
know.
Successful reality TV star of all time.
Yeah, and his lips and his short arms and what are we looking at?
He knew Jeffrey Epstein. He's a next door neighbor. Who's Jeffrey Epstein's next door neighbor? He appointed Secretary of Labor the shyster that negotiated a sweetheart deal for Epstein. There are a lot of things.
He's just deep into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's another.
Ghislaine Maxwell. Have you seen the flap between Elon Musk and MSNBC, the legacy media?
It's such worldwide wrestling. Really, it is.
I don't know. Ghislaine Maxwell was running a real blackmail operation. She and Epstein.
I don't know about any of these people. You follow way more than me, but we're going to have to wrap it up because we've been over an hour now. It's been very educational. I want to come back, bring it back to talk more World War II.
People have to, they've really got to dig deep on their own. They've got to look at the original, you know, look at the news accounts and magazine articles from 1936, 1937, 1938, 1939. You really have to, you know, look at it the way people were looking at it back then, because that, in a sense, is going to give you a slightly more accurate representation than what we're seeing now, which is just propaganda via hindsight, you know, 2020 propaganda, where we're looking backwards and these are the good guys and these are the bad guys. Because now their sides are being flipped back and forth. Mussolini was man of the year at least twice. I think he made the cover of Time magazine three times. Hitler, definitely man of the year, cover of Time magazine. Of course, now we have person of the year with a man of the year anymore. But yeah, it's when you start seeing the really weird, and that's something we shouldn't hesitate to point out to people. If they start getting up on their high horse about the abortion issue, chances are this is someone who wants mandated vaccinations and will fire public employees who refuse to take the vax. So they're not about your body, your choice. They're not about that in the least. They're hypocrites. And that's the first thing I thought when I heard that. You know, this is not going to work as an issue for them, but they're desperate. They're desperate. And as I say again, of course, nobody really leaked anything. But what's the narrative that's being run down? We've watched the utter discrediting of the Congress as an institution with these clowns. Pelosi stumbles around like she's on meds or drunk half the time. And Schumer is a clown, and Kamala Harris. And now the presidency has been really degraced and debated by having an apparent senile dementia groper in there that boasts about his low approval ratings. And now the court's going to, well, actually, in a way, the court was already discredited by that Kavanaugh hearing where they brought in, IPS thinks it was Kavanaugh himself in drag.
Himself
of rape. I just say,
I think Mr. E looked at that too.
I hope so. I hope so. Kavanaugh's the one that authored, he practically wrote the Patriot Act. And that wasn't mentioned once during any of those hearings. His signing off on extraordinary rendition, enhanced interrogation techniques and torture, and the gutting of habeas corpus, he signed off on all that because he was White House chief counsel. That wasn't mentioned once. Instead, they brought in this character, Christine Blasey Ford, to accuse him of having sexually assaulted her at the age of 17 or 16 or 30 years, whatever many years ago. That was a clown show if ever there was one. But I think they're going to debase these institutions. I don't think you look at this and you say, well, how can they be doing this? It's crazy. Can't people see how crazy this is? I think that's the intention. I got to believe that's the intention. They want to discredit all of these institutions so that in desperation, people will turn to global government. They'll turn to the UN. And I want to see this new building in West Africa they've put up. I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, theecologist.com/blog. That's where it's at. Well, Lynn, thanks for joining. It was a good call. You're always full. You got more information than most people. And you could just keep going. And
Don't hesitate to dig into the lies that we've been spun about the so-called Second World War and the Third Reich.
I enjoy it. It's interesting. I've actually learned quite a bit listening to that. Did you listen to the Ernst Zundel 15 hours that I put on FacoTube? Is that of any
interest? That's kind of long. What I have been listening to is Paul Heller's, the guy you turned me on to discussing, deconstructing the whole climate change phase.
Oh, Tony Heller, you like him?
Tony Heller.
You like that?
That's really, he's got like 9 hours where he takes apart all their fake, he shows historically how they fabricated the numbers and how they misinterpreted things and on and on and on. So, yeah, climate change is a hoax. It's a scientific fraud. Massive, like as much of a fraud as Piltdown Man was a fraud. And this, the latest stuff with the ISS, I guess you're seeing that.
No.
Apparently the Russians are opting out of it.
Oh, is that right? Okay. I tuned to IPS for all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he covers that. He covers that in great detail. But really, it should be possible to discredit these guys on all fronts. Every narrative they come up with is so transparently fake that the only way people can embrace it is if they deny the evidence of their own senses. But I guess we've seen that happen before. So we're into the realm of some really exotic social pathologies here, I think.
Well, I'll call you back next time. We'll have you on a little more often, maybe, because you've got... Sounds like you got the daily scoop every day. We could do a daily show just of what you've been listening to every single day, especially in America.
Well, I'm a consumer of your product.
Oh, I know.
And especially the to fakeologist chats. There's a lot of interesting stuff in that as well. But there's so much out there now. I keep stressing the technology is not inherently evil. The technology is neutral. It's value free.
Yeah.
We have to seize the infrastructure and liberate it for us. For us.
I agree.
Take it out of the hands of these psychos. That's all.
I agree.
That takes muscle, you know.
And make sure, don't forget, you were posting on Fakeologist forums. Don't forget to keep logging in there. I don't know.
I'll try to get back in there.
Get back in there. Yeah.
All right.
In
the meantime, take care and best wishes to you. Especially, I really liked listening to your daughter the other night.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll let her know.
Sort of back and forth between her and Marcus Allen and Diego and the rest of them.
Yeah, that was a cluttered show. There were quite a few voices on there. It's very.
We got to dig more into cryptocurrency. I mean, we got to be real critical about it because I feel like the central banks definitely want to turn that to their advantage.
I agree. It's something to look at. It can be liberating if it's being used the right way, but I think by having a million cryptocurrencies, it doesn't help either because everyone's scattered all over the place. You know, you think having different just country currencies is bad enough. You know, I've got some Swiss francs for some shekels, and that is all confusing in and of itself for most people. So you have 1,000 million cryptocurrencies where you don't even know where to exchange them. I think it just fractures the whole money supply. Meanwhile, the people that run the place are just buying up the good old corporations and American dollars and making out like bandits.
The question is, what becomes the reserve currency that you have to use in order to deal in basic commodities like oil and natural gas? Is it going to be the ruble?
Well, it could be many. It could be three or four. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, really. I don't know the answer. I try and
figure. Money is a big deal. The money thing is a big deal. It really is, but especially the inflation. The inflation is killing people. They've got to react to it. There's no way unless you're really rich, everybody out there is feeling it at the pump everywhere else. Price of food. These are real things.
Oh, yeah.
These are real things. So, all right. Hey, take care.
All right. Thanks, Lynn. All the best.
I'll be listening.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Good night. Okay, there goes Lynn. If you're on Feces Book, you can go to her site or her part or her place rather on Feces Book. She's got some good stuff. And I'll post her profile. That way you can go make friends with her. She does a lot of posting over there. And you should take a look at that. Yeah, she got so much information. I find it really interesting, and I didn't even know that she was into World War II stuff, like I was, and I definitely haven't figured out World War II in any way. So I like having people on that have looked into it, and she's been around for quite a few more years than me. So definitely a treasure trove of information. So we'll have to have her back on. We have varied guests on this show. I don't mind having recurring guests so the listenership can get to know people. If you have suggestions of people you'd like on, you can let me know and let them know that they're welcome on here. I do have some other ideas to have different people on, but it's also good to have the regular set on so people can familiarize themselves with it. And Lynn has just got tons of information. And I appreciate it. Don't forget, I don't know if you listen to the show unless you send me an email at ima@fakeologist.com or send a donation at fakeologist.com/donate. And don't forget the Discord at fake11.com/discord and the forums, fakeologist.com/forums2. Looks like someone is about to call in. Maybe I'll take this call. Let the phone ring here. If I'm on the line with a guest, I don't always open up the call. Fakeologist.
Hi, how are you today?
Hey, good. Duncan, BC, it says here.
Okay. I just have a internet phone number. I tried calling another number and I kept getting cut off. Something that tends to happen every once in a while.
No, I didn't have the phone lines open because I had a guest that was actually on the phone. So, yeah, your phone wouldn't have, your call wouldn't have gone through with that guest. But, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. My name's Jesse.
Hey, Jesse. How you doing?
Oh, sorry.
Good. Go for it.
I'm doing all right. You know, I have, I've been introduced to your show, and I've been listening to your show, and it's very interesting to me. I also know Barry Prince personally.
Oh, right. Barry. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was on your show not too long ago, and... yeah, I just, you know, like with knowledge comes great responsibility, and I just feel like I have a responsibility to pass on the knowledge here.
Yeah.
And I have a...
what do you got?
I've been trying to get information to people, and it seems there's certainly a conscious level that comprehends what's going on with certain things, and so... I've been trying to get a hold of you, man, and I've been talking to Barry, trying to get a Zoom conversation with him, and it's just, there's a lot going on in the world today, as you know, as I've heard on your show.
Whereabouts are you?
I just want to comment.
That, you're in British Columbia, right?
I am in British Columbia, yes. That's
okay.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
So, one thing I just want to say is, yeah, just... I appreciate listening to your content there because, you know, I feel like you have a very honest perspective and you really, you know, level out the facts. You know, you just, you know, you just you keep a very open mind towards things to.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Ultimately,
I don't have too many solutions, so, that's for sure. But I'm trying. I'm just trying to stay sane here and trying to stay healthy.
Well,
That was even before COVID.
I hope that I can come up. I hope that, you know, the information that I have and some friends that I have is part of the solution because there's definitely a lot of pollution out there, man. And, you know, it comes down to law and where Canada's at currently since we're in a state of martial law. Do you understand that concept, martial law, where we're in neutrality?
Well, a little bit. I dabble in that stuff, but just give me the goods because I was kind of just about to close out the show here, but I can take a few more minutes because I've been going since 8 o'clock. I try and keep it to about an hour and a half, so I've gone long already. But yeah, give me what you got, and I'll see if it makes any sense to me.
Okay, sorry. So we're recording right now? We're on the show?
Yeah, you caught me at the tail end of the show, actually.
Okay. I just called in randomly.
Oh, did you? That's funny.
There's a lot of information here, and I'm just going to do my best to get you the key facts. And certainly, it's something to you know you can expand on in a show. And it's revolved around quantum grammar and the fact that Canada is in martial law as of April 12, 2017. 2017.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially, we're in neutrality. There's been a quantum grammar constitution that has been built, constructed, and it has been submitted to Ottawa with a proof of service. So the idea, and having said that, so the idea is like the post office is open for contracts, and wherever there's a country or a nation, rather, by definition, where there's a nation, this post office dictates that nation, and we're talking about corporations. So, what they do is, since the post office is the only evidence of, a contract being, only evidence of a contract, with the proof of service, you get a registered number. Essentially, this has been used to implement, laws through the grammar, because of course, words control us, right? Like words control us. There's like wizardry of words. I mean, like it's perception. There's a lot of things there. But so they've used such things as pronouns, adjectives, adverbs, and they're all no contract words because every time there's a syllabic break in a word, that's a word. There's a root word. There's a pronoun. There's a suffix and a prefix, and it dictates past times and future times. But real law is now space. There's the saying with the commercial legal system, no law or facts shall be tried in the court. And what
yeah,
that
I don't doubt that. Yeah, I don't doubt that. Yeah, so, I get that.
So, I'm trying to stick to the roots here because there's a lot of information. There's a lot of history here. You know, the birth of a nation began in 1776, which is the day of the slave, when the birth certificate was essentially created. And that all came to an end for Canada, as I said, in martial law. All this, April 12th, 2017. So essentially, the law, the constitution,
what about the myth of Canada? That guy.
Charter of rights, all that is preserved.
What about the myth of Canada? Me? There's a website called The Myth of Canada. That guy, Doug, somebody.
Okay, I'm not familiar.
Oh, that guy, I think maybe what you're talking about is similar to what he talks about. It's a website that he's been on the Freedom Report, you know, Kevin J. Johnson's show. The Myth is Canada?
No, I'm not familiar, no.
Well, I don't...
No, I'm not familiar.
I don't know if you're talking about the same thing as him. I'm just going to try and bring it up. But the myth...
Have you heard the name Russell J. Gould?
No. Canadian?
Okay, that's a starter, and I'd love to send you information, man. Like, I have copies of this, the Constitution. Like, my personal friend was involved with the class action that delivered this to Ottawa, the Quantum Grammar Constitution. Over 90 countries in this realm this planet, however you want to perceive it, but they have signed to this Constitution. It's copyrighted material. It's preserved under the Title IV flag, which is the previous United States flag. They lost possession of that flag. They put a lease on a flag, right? So they lease it, and it's a corporation sort of thing. Essentially, that ended in 1999. They lost the rights to that flag. A brilliant man, very well endowed with law and the fundamentals and the construct of government and everything. He built a quantum grammar constitution, and that's now I've heard on your show someone speaking about quantum to the letter. Okay, so like an E can look like a 3, and an M and a Z can look like a 2. It's not that far. It's not that far, and that's I'm still kind of learning about that. But there is a constitution that's been copyrighted under that flag.
In other words, the port authorities does not own that flag. Control evidence, vessels and dry dock.
Evidence.
All judges in the United States and all courthouses are paid by the port authorities.
That's a very big secret.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, David Wynn Miller. I think I actually started watching this. This is a 9-hour thing.
David Wynn Miller. Yes. Okay. So. Okay, so when you complete a task, it's a no contract, but it's a performance. Okay, so you complete a performance, you take their document, you syntax it, which you're basically auditing them through, because like it's not the entire contract as a whole that's the contract. It comes down to the individual word. If you don't agree with the definition of the word, then it's a no contract word and the contract is null and void. So essentially, with you have your volition and, as a claim of live life claimant, which is something that you go through the same process as if you were born, in a hospital, which you're also dry docked in foreign land. It's like another country, just like a courthouse. It's like another country. There's a certain process. They make the best thing that could happen to you essentially is that the doctor could drop you on the floor, because then you touch the ground, the land, and you're inherent to the land before they process you, and give you the handprints and, essentially, create a registration of live birth. And then derive extract a birth certificate from that. So essentially, you're redoing this whole process in other terms. You've exited the Canadian venue. That is all. It's all, like I said, that's all done as of April 12, 2017. We are in martial law. And what we're seeing now is perpetuating fraud. Like martial law means we're in neutrality. And when you're in neutrality, you're neutral. So now we have so for example, I'm just going to throw this out there, is in 1999 as well, Pakistan declared martial law. And what they did is they ripped every judge, attorney, and lawyer out of their houses. They beat them and threw them in jail under the circumstances that they were perpetuating fraud and benefit from it. Okay, so that's where we're at in Canada. That's where we're at in the United States. We're all, like most of the countries in the world, are all bound by the same constitution, which is in handwriting, cursive. It's been taken out of the curriculum for that reason, and anything in handwriting does not exist. So, like I said, there's a lot of information. I'm trying to keep
it's okay. Listen, I got to wrap up the show, but I have looked into this a little bit with this David Wynn Miller character, and I put him up on the screen here, and I think you guys are talking about the same thing. But
beyond David Wynn Miller is he's passed away. He kind of sold out to the elite with the quantum grammar. He was dealing with China to some extent. He was selling out the United States or whatever. But anyways, he ended up passing away. But
what did he die of?
Gould is he's the one that's like in control. He has total copyright privileges or rights over that material.
Wow.
And I know you're on your show. I caught you maybe at a funny time, but I would, I have a friend that's very involved in the quantum grammar community, and there's groups that have been set up to try and improve this world and to try and like quantum grammar is it's for the correctness. It's for, to be a captain of your own vessel, to be in control of the contracts, to capture the contracts. You put your fee for freight on there, your registered number that you've registered your entity through the Universal Postal Service. I'm hoping I'm hitting keynotes here. I know I'm just spitting information, but everybody registers an entity through the Universal Postal Service, which makes that a global jurisdiction because there's post offices all over the world. They dictate the facility of land. They dictate the laws of the land, shipping lanes, so on and so forth. So, but I know you're on at the end of your show, but I've been really trying to reach some people to gain an audience here because there's a major lack of knowledge. And this is a way to exit this venue, which is perpetuated fraud, which is the world is a stage. And it's just they're getting the major problem here is ignorance and not having the correct knowledge. And I'm trying to reach out to you and Barry, and I'm trying to I have resources here. And I really hope that you consider this. And, I can liaison you with some of this information, and you can totally make your own judgment, but quantum is quantum. It's mathematical or it's a numerical sequence it only works one way. Quantum physics, quantum, it's quantum. It's numbers with designated to the words, and it's pulling things apart. Well, anyways,
all right, Postmaster General Russell J. Gould. Okay, I'll try and take a listen to this. It's definitely different. I'll listen to this guy if you recommend it.
That's right. I've witnessed people go through this process, and they've mailed the military. They successfully completed syntax documents, which is ultimately auditing them under Title 18, 1001. It's Title 18, 1001 is fraudulent statement, and it's 20 years in jail and $25 million in fine. So that's the main thing here. So
yeah, I'm going to look into it.
Grammar is wizard soup.
I'm going to look into it.
Yeah, so...
very interesting.
So, is there some way that you can contact with you here?
Fakeologist.com/contact is my contact.
Yep.
Fakeologist.com. That's all my contact info. And send me an email or something. I'll look at this. I'll watch Russell J. Gould. He has a YouTube channel. I'll see what this is about. And
documentary, Last Flag Standing. Yeah. Check out Last Flag Standing. He goes into the history up to the point where George Washington sent over here as a double agent from Britain, captured Canada, established a post office. That's the laws that the Indian, the natives
did.
Did
you know that Benjamin Franklin started the Canadian Postal Service?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
That's right. And he established the first post office over in Idaho or something like that in the United States. Yeah. He double-crossed Britain. That's why we had the War of 1812. You know, it's so confusing. Britain's fighting Britain, sort of thing.
Yeah,
because he double crossed Britain. His agent number was Agent 711.
Oh,
and
that's a good,
yeah, you know, another coincidence, right? Or if you're a coincidence.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. You know? There's so much of our history that we don't know. But yeah, Benjamin Franklin was trying to get Quebec as the 14th colony, I believe, but they didn't go for it. So there's a lot of stuff that went down.
So
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of interesting.
But what's your name again?
But if you look at his banner, last flag standing.
What's your name again, buddy?
At the beginning. Pardon me, sir?
I didn't catch your name.
My name's Jesse.
Oh, right. Sorry, Jesse. Okay, Jesse. That's it's good info. And you kind of caught me at the end of the show, but maybe I'll look into it a bit, and maybe we'll have you back, and you can try and explain it in more detail. But send me some info, and I'll take a peek.
Certainly. I mean, I know the federal postmaster judge that lives here in Canada, in Edmonton. I've met him personally. I've met a number of individuals. You know, I have a lot of resources here, so
right,
which can be backed up. Yeah.
So, all right. That's
interesting.
Cool.
Thank you. I'm very anxious talking to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jesse. Very good.
I really strive to get this information out
and
there.
Say and hi to Barry. If you get a hold of Barry,
I will.
I haven't heard from Barry lately. I only asked him where the hell his show was, and he couldn't give me a link easily, except on Facebook, which I don't like using. So, maybe get
on. Yeah. Well, we were trying to construct a Zoom meeting there last week, and him and a gentleman named Doug and a friend of mine named Samuel, and we're going to talk about all this, and we're missing each other, so I've kind of taken that step initiative to get a hold of you too.
So, you're a good man.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Jesse. Nice, all the best.
No mushroom picking there. You probably mentioned that.
yeah. He's a good man too. All right, Jesse, I got to hit the hay now. I've been going, and it's late here in the Eastern Canada. So,
all right. Totally understand, man. I'm doing my duty, and I know you are too, man.
I'm trying.
You and keep up the good work. You have some great information
out
there.
Oh, thank you. You too.
I don't agree with some of the stuff about the law and the common law and stuff. It's all done. You know, but I just, I'm really happy to be speaking with you, you know,
because
I've listened to you a lot, man. And,
thank you, man.
You know, you're on the job site radio, man. So,
trying.
It's, great to talk to you, dude.
All right, dude. All the best. Thank you, Jesse. Take care, huh?
Absolutely. Take care, Tom.
Okay. Bye-bye. There goes Jesse. Wow. That was, he called three times. And, when I was talking to Lynn, the calls don't go through, but, interesting stuff. I don't know if I understood a word of that, but maybe you did. And this is this Fakeologist show. Anything can happen. And is anyone still listening? Yeah, I got a few people listening. Advanced setting, Doug Force. Yeah, I like Doug Force. Yeah, that's true. Advanced setting. Okay, guys, I'm out. Fakeologist.com and Fakotube.com. Good night.